Hey everyone, thank you for choosing to listen to Barely Mexican. My name is Miguel Garcia. I do apologize for putting this episode out a little late. I definitely wanted to put it out a lot sooner, but I definitely did have some, you know, personal issues that arrived and everything like that. So it went ahead and delayed everything, but I'm here and I'm ready to get things back on track. So last time I went ahead and talked about, like, you know, my name and kind of, you know, a little bit of my background, and today we're going to dive a little bit deeper. And like I said, the first, you know, several episodes are definitely just going to be about, like, me and, like, where I come from and, you know, just my views in life. Just so, you know, you guys can just get, like, a ground understanding of, like, where I come from and why I say or why I act the way I do, or things like that. And so, like I said before, like, I was born in a small town. I was also raised by a single mom and my grandma. I was raised by women my whole life. I didn't necessarily have, like, a father figure or a male role to really step into my life. So there's definitely some aspects of me that are real feminine. But I'm not ashamed of it. Like, you know, I am who I am. If that's just, it is what it is. Like, I'm not going to act super macho and be like, oh, I eat nails for breakfast because I usually cry for breakfast. But I didn't, like, growing up, I don't want to make it sound like super bad. Like, there was, you know, it wasn't all bad. Growing up, there was definitely some situations and some certain circumstances that made me grow up a little bit faster than you know, the kids around me. But for the most part, I grew up in a very blessed home. Like, I always had clothes on my back. I always had food in my belly and a roof over my head. And in reality, that's all you can really ever ask for. You know, granted, we didn't have the nicest things. You know, it was my mom and my grandma basically trying to raise me and my cousins. And we'll get into that situation a little bit later. But and they did with what the best that they could and the best that they knew how. And it formed me. And here we are. I'm just a loud, sarcastic person who doesn't really hold back. But so we'll start off, like, growing up, like, I was always very, like, and I guess to this day, like, if I'm comfortable or in the right mood, I guess, like, I can be very social. And I guess when I was younger, I was a lot more social. You know, I was able to make friends easier growing up than, or when I was younger than, you know, now, where I kind of distance myself from people sometimes. And the reason I do that is just because, like, I feel like I have a strong personality, and so sometimes I come off rude or abrasive, or because I'm the kind of person where, like, I said what I had said, and if you don't like that, then, you know, that's not my problem, which kind of sucks, which can get me into a lot of trouble. But anyways, going back on topic, I was raised by my mom and my grandma. I never really knew my dad. He never really wanted a relationship with me, and we'll get into that a little bit later, because that was a real fun situation that happened there. But so I guess I'm just gonna dive into it, and I'm not trying to have a pity party or nothing, because, you know, for the most part, I think I came out pretty okay. But I guess life kind of just took a wild turn. Like, I was really young when it happened. I think I was like three or four when my aunt went to prison. So it was my grandma, right? My grandma has four kids. And then, you know, my aunt. So it's like my aunt, my mom, and then my two uncles. And so my aunt went to prison for murder, which is, you know, not always a fun time. She did 9 years. Because I guess it was, like, they called it manslaughter. I don't really remember. I was very young when it happened. And it kind of shook the whole family up. My aunt had three kids at the time. The youngest only being, like, 12. Or the oldest being 12. And, like, the youngest being, well, He's like 9 months older than I am, so like maybe 4 or 5. And so it kind of forced my mom and my grandma to raise all of us in the same household. And we had some pretty good times. Like, my grandma's house, she used to live in this pink apartment, and like that was the place where, you know, every holiday we had grills, like birthdays, you know, we had cookouts. 4th of July was always a big thing in my family. Like, we would, like, my family, like, we would all just get together and just have fireworks and, you know, have a good time and, you know, laugh and love. And it's definitely something I do miss about my family, because it doesn't necessarily happen so much, because everyone's kind of just living their own lives. But anyways, so I grew up, you know, with my older cousins, and it was definitely a rough time. And it was because a lot of the time, like, I don't want to be like, oh, I was bullied, but for the most part, they were just like, my older cousins would bully me. Like, they would legit, like, they would just beat me up for no reason. If I had something they wanted, they would take it from me. They would, you know, they would beat me up and take it out of my hands, and then blame me for it, you know. And so it, you know, growing up, like, at first I was a pushover, and then I learned you can fight with words. And I'm the kind of person where I like to use my words. I learned how to use my words very well. And it definitely, like, I just know how to push buttons. It's a real superpower. But no, yeah, so we all grew up in the same house. Basically, my mom worked 2 jobs to support me and my little brother. And then, you know, my grandma would work, like, so my mom would, like, work during the day, basically. So she, and then my grandma would work nights for, like, a driving service, like, for, like, a medical driving service, I guess, like, and take people out of town for, like, doctor's appointments and stuff like that. And so she would work graveyard, and everything like that. So I spent a lot of time with my cousins, and they were always stronger than me, mostly because, like, I was too lazy to work out, because I'm just like, this isn't my life, you know? And, but there was, like, a certain point where, you know, as my cousins got older, like, you know, a little bit older, like, you know, they had a lot of hurt in their heart because of the situation and how they grew up, you know. And growing up, my grandma wasn't necessarily, like, the warmest person. I remember when I was younger, like, I was grandma's little boy. Like, I was grandma's favorite. I still on record, I'm still grandma's favorite grandchild. I'm taking that with me to the grave. But I fight with my little brother over that one, but I'm still grandma's favorite. And so growing up in that way was definitely rough, because my grandma is the kind of person, like, if she was mad at one of us, she was mad at all of us. Like, it was corporal punishment, you know. She was a strong believer in that. And, you know, for every hanger on the floor, we all got, like, 10 spankings. And she kind of went a little bit, like, overboard with it, especially growing up. Like, there had been a few situations. Like, I remember a certain situation where I was in the back room, and I wanted to watch TV, and my cousins, they went ahead and locked me out of the room. And so I was just like, okay. So I was like, I think I was like 8 or 9. And so, I was like 8 or 9. And then, so I got a piece of paper, right? Because they were telling me this all the time. And at the time, I didn't even know what it meant. But I wrote it on a paper, and I wrote, "You suck cock," on a piece of paper, and slid it under the door. And then these little guys, like, these guys go crying to my grandma saying, "Look what Miguel did," and this and that. And then grandma beats all of our butts, and then, like, has us work outside. So I was mad, and it would frustrate me, because there was such a hypocrisy with them. Like, they'd be like, "Oh, don't snitch, and you're always a tattletale," and this and that, and da da da. And, like, I would hardly ever say anything, you know? And then it was always, Like, and then, like, the minute I did something, they'd be the first ones to tell. It was so frustrating. Like, they'd just be like, oh, don't snitch, don't do that, and, like, keep your mouth shut. And I never said anything. But it was so frustrating growing up like that. But then, I learned not to give a heck. Well, give a fuck, really. Excuse my language. Sorry. And it made me a better person, I think. And I remember this one day specifically where I was learning to play chess. Now, granted, I'm not the best chess player. It's something I'll do on my free time, maybe, if I have nothing else to do. But my cousin, he was cheating in chess, and he wouldn't stop. And so I got frustrated and kicked the board in his face. Granted, which isn't the right solution, but at the time I was only like five, like, or no, I wasn't five. I was like 8 or 9 when that happened, around the same time about the whole cock situation. And then what was it? This one, like the little brother, his name's Richie, my cousin Richie, he goes crying to my grandma and he's just like, oh, he was just like, oh, grandma, he kept a board in my face and this and that. And then so grandma gets mad at me, right? Spanks me and he's just like sitting on her lap laughing or whatever, right? And then so, because at the time, like before then, like I would just let them get away with whatever. And my mom would like tell me, she's like, you need to like stand up for yourself. Like you don't let yourself, you know? And then so like I got spanked, but then afterwards my mom took me out for ice cream. I was like, I'm proud of you for standing up for yourself. She's like, granted, it wasn't the best solution, but, and so like little 10-year-old me was super confused. Like I was just like, I thought I did something wrong, but my mom was really proud of the fact that like I stood up for myself. And I think that's definitely a lesson that people should definitely learn, because, you know, like obviously, yes, be kind, but like cause no harm, but take no shit kind of thing. And it comes to a point where, like, and I guess that's a lesson I try to stick by. And so, like, my cousins, you know, and then growing up in, like, the teenage years, like, there was a lot of, you know, they got into drugs. And, like, I guess they like, were in gangs. If you can see right now, I'm doing, like, air quotes because, like, they were, like, teenagers. And in here in this small town, like... Like, there's no, I mean, there is, I guess, gang violence, but there's not necessarily, like, I mean, it's not like East LA or, like, you know, we're not going to Chicago or something. I mean, I've never even been to either of those places, so I don't even know what I'm talking about. But, you know, like, it's basically Disneyland compared to those places. Like, you know, there's definitely a lot of tougher people out there. And so they would act all hard and they're like, oh, I'm in a gang and this and that. And my viewpoint on gangs are... Like, you know, if you're getting a gang, like, you're dumb. Like, you know, granted, like, well, the gangs here are broken because it's always like, oh, East Side, West Side, and Sudanians. And I'm just like, okay, well, first of all, we're all a bunch of farmers here. Not really, but it's a college town. But they, you know, everyone here. I mean, I guess the only thing is to do here, really, because, I mean, it's the second largest town, like, city in New Mexico. So, granted, there's not as much stuff to do. A lot of people probably... Y'all probably never even heard of New Mexico. We're between Texas and Arizona. Excuse me. And it was really funny because they were just... Like, they would get involved in gangs and be like, oh, this and that, and da-da-da, and I'm so hard. And in reality, like... Looking back, they were, like, the weakest people I knew. You know, like, they would always cry for every little thing. You know, they started running away from home. You know, they had, granted, they did have a lot of demons. Like, our situation was kind of rough, you know, towards the, you know, in our teenage years. And then, you know, it all kind of stopped when my mom and my grandma had moved into a trailer together with us and the kids, right? With me and my little brother. It was on a, like, half acre of property. And you know, it was... I don't want to say, like, up the hill because you guys won't necessarily understand what that means. But, it was out there and they did it together. And I think that's kind of where things started falling apart. Because, you know, at this time, my aunt had already been out of prison. You know, her kids were living with her, you know, and everything like that. And, you know, and she was mending the relationship with her children and everything like that. And so when, you know, it was time, like, but I think then, you know, my grandma was really bitter about the fact, because my grandma's always been the kind of person who, you know, she wanted to be free. Like, you know, she grew up in a really rough household. You know, like, she was, you know, her mother left her real young. You know, her dad didn't even think, like, he was hers. And it was just, like, this long mess and everything like that. She was in abusive relationships, and, you know, so she's always been the kind of person of, like, she just wanted her freedom, and she, like, her dream, she just wanted to be, like, a truck driver and drive around the United States and, you know, go explore and do whatever she wanted to do. But since, you know, she had to help raise us, it definitely got in the way of that. And so I think at this age, she was dealing with that and consoling them, you know, that wasn't necessarily going to happen. Because at this time she was like already 50. And so she, at this time, like, my home life started becoming really unstable. And, you know, I was in middle school at the time. I was battling depression. I was just really angry at the fact because, like, of my dad. I don't want to say depression. Well, I don't know. It was a real struggle during this, you know, the 4 or 5 years that we had lived there. Because, you know, my dad just didn't want a relationship with me. I was dealing with that. And, you know, the anger of, you know, all that stuff. And it took a lot out of me. But at that time, yeah, so my grandma was really angry about, you know, not being able to fulfill her dreams in a way, which, you know, she, in a way, like, you know, she had the right to do. But the way that she went ahead and did it was very detrimental. She at this point, I believe this is where she was, like, the most abusive. Like, we were not getting along at all. Like, literally, the slightest thing would set her off. She would always become angry. And everything like that. And so on top of that, was I having to deal with my grandma's anger. I was having to deal with, like, my own anger and my own, you know, like, because there were some stuff from my childhood too that I'm not necessarily comfortable talking about right now that I was still trying to deal with, and, you know, get over. And so it had come down, like, literally, like, we were just always arguing. Like, basically every day it was just something new. You know, my grandma or my mom, she was working for the city, and then at the time she was working at McDonald's, you know, to help pay for bills, because my grandma had to stop working because she had a stroke, and she just didn't want to work anymore. And we ended up eventually losing the house because of it. But anyways, when that caused a whole nother family scenario, which, you know, there was a lot of tension in that home, and it had, like, a lot of bad memories. But it, because, like, no, I think in that space and time, no one was real happy. Was really happy in that home. We did have happy moments in that place, you know, like, we did have bonfires and the family would come over, you know, and then, you know, my grandma had bought us BB guns and, like, she would teach us how to shoot, and everything like that. She used to take us shooting, like, with actual rifles, but she ended up pawning those or something. But it when it comes down to it, she at this point, it was just a real struggle. I was in middle school at the time. I think I had moved in, like, sixth grade there. And then I had stayed till freshman year of high school. So it was about, like, 3 or 4 years of living in that household, basically living like this. And then, so I was, like, at the beginning stages of living in that house, like I had just mentioned, my, you know, I first met my dad when I was 6 years old. Before then, I never even knew him, didn't really, you know what he looked like. And it's kind of sad because, like, I don't want to say sad, but it was kind of funny because, like, when I was little, like, I just envisioned him as, like, a superhero who was just too busy. Because that was always, like, how I grew up. Like, my mom was always too busy. You know, sometimes my grandma was too busy. you know, every, like, the adults in my life were always too busy. So I just figured he would be too busy too, you know, saving other people. And, you know, I had this, like, huge fantasy. Boy, was I so disappointed. But anyways, we'll get that, like, a little bit later on in the episode. But, so, when I first met my dad, I was introduced to him as my mom's friend. And then they had a long makeout session in the car with me and my little brother asleep in the back seat. And then I had, what was it? And then the next day he stayed the night, you know what that means? He did some hanky panky. Ugh, I'm grossing myself out. I need to stop. And then I went ahead and then what was it? And then one day when I'm going to school, my mom's like, LOL, by the way, he's your dad. Have fun. And then just drops me off at school. Just drops this bombshell on 6-year-old me, right? And then just leaves. And then, like, just drops me off at school. And it's, like, pretending like everything was okay. And so it was really weird because before, for the most part, I had never called anyone dad. I had never really... Because, you know, my mom wouldn't date, like, didn't date. Or she didn't... You know, if she did, we didn't see the men in her life. And everything like that. And so it was very interesting. And then from there, I would go over to his house on the weekends. And so he would like stick me in the room with his mom, my grandma, and he would legit like go get drunk in another room. And so I had stopped going because like there wasn't a real relationship there. Granted, the family treated me like royalty because my dad was the only boy out of 7 kids. And then I was his only child, which I'm also a boy, if you were wondering. But I identify as a T-Rex. Just kidding. That's a little insensitive. I'm sorry. I'm not really sorry though. Anyways, so yeah, I had stopped going after that. And there had been several instances where like I had tried to reach out and like have a relationship with him. And especially after his mother died, I had tried to be there. And at that time I was like 13 or 14. And at this time he was dating a girl with some kids that I went to daycare with when I was younger, that I basically grew up with. So that was really interesting. Oh no, I was 16 or 17 when it happened. Yeah, I was 16 or 17 when it happened because then my dad died like 4 years later. And we'll get into that funeral situation because that was a hot mess. Yeah, and so he was dating this girl, and he eventually got married to her. But yeah, and it hurt me because I remember at the funeral, she had a little boy, and I think at the time he was like 3 or 4. And so I was running around and playing with my cousins, and I come up to him, and he was like, "Who?" And I could hear him, and I know he's not talking to me. And so I see him, and he's talking to this little boy, and he goes, "I love you, son. I'm always going to be there for you, son." And that hurt. Like, I was like, how are you going to be there for a kid that's not even yours, but you can't even be there for me? And so, like, I went off and, like, I started to play soccer with my cousins. And I'm not athletically inclined at all. But that day I was kicking ass because I was so angry. And so it was definitely, like, one of those things, you know, like, where I would try to reach out, and it just, he didn't want to, and I guess he just didn't know how. I guess, I don't necessarily know what he was so afraid of, because I think in the first episode, I went ahead and mentioned, like, his dad went ahead and ran away, and, like, all this other stuff. So I didn't, like, from my aspect, like, if I ever have kids, I'm definitely not gonna, you know, I'm definitely gonna be there for my kids, whether me and the mom work out or not, or whatever. Like, my kids are going to know who their father is and, you know, they're loved. And, you know, and he turned out to just be, like, a raging alcoholic. Like, he never worked a day in his life. He, you know, lived with his mom basically up until the day she died. And which is, I think, is kind of sad. And he legit, like, he just didn't want the relationship. So when I was younger, like when I was like, you know, in middle school dealing with this, it was really rough. And I had a lot of anger towards him. But it wasn't until eighth grade when things get really interesting. Like, my life is just one roller coaster. Things, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another. You know, things get really, you know, things will be good. And then all of a sudden, the next day, they just turn. But in eighth grade, I went to the doctors one day. They were doing a routine checkup. They did some blood work for some reason. I don't quite remember. And then they tell me that my white cell blood counts are low. So it started off, somehow I ended up, they said, like, they thought I had mono. And then it, like, snowed down. And then, all of a sudden, they thought I had leukemia. Like, they basically confirmed that I had leukemia. I didn't start any chemo, and we'll get into this, but I didn't start any chemo or anything like that. So I think I was like 13 or 14, and I legit thought like I was gonna die. Like, they legit like were preparing me, like they put me in therapy, like they, you know, to help come to terms with my death. And again, like going, being that young and coming to terms with your mortality will make you grow up so fast. Like, it'll make you view the world in a different way, and especially about like what's important and what's not important, and you know, what matter and what doesn't matter kind of thing. And so, you know, they were just like, no, like they basically, I think they just had to run one more test to basically really confirm that I had leukemia, but they had basically just confirmed it. Like, they were just like, yeah, no, you have leukemia. Like, it's going to be rough. Like, I was going to be starting chemo and all this other stuff. And so during that whole process of coming to terms and coming to grips that, you know, because I even remember like a counselor, like my mom had talked to the school, and the school was like, LOL, like they sat me down with the school counselor. The school counselor was just like, you know, I guess, you know, 2 years before a student had passed away from leukemia and everything like that. So they were just like, you know, they were, I guess, trying to get me to come to grips. I don't know what they were trying to do. They were trying to inform me. Either way, it was a scary and such a dark time in my life. And going through that part, I struggled with depression. Oh, I also forgot to mention, like, during this whole process, like, especially when I was younger, like, my mom would go to church. Like, we would go to church. And we go to a Pentecostal fellowship. I now go to a, my family doesn't go to church. But a Pentecostal fellowship, right? And I tell you, I'm all over the place with this story, but I'll tie it all up in a neat little bow later. So I was basically raised in church. And I find church very comforting. There are certain times and places, like, and especially during, you know, like something like that had happened, where I can just cry out to God. And everything like that. Like, don't get me wrong, this is not going to be a religious podcast, because obviously I'm not the best Christian, because I cussed several times during this episode just alone. But it, you know, when I, there's a place that I can come to broken, and there's just something that happens where if when I cry out to God, and when I lay my burdens at, on, you know, basically at his feet and say, you know, fix this because I can't do it, there's a restoration and a healing, and it helps, like, it legit helps me, like, it's helped me through so much, that I can't even really explain how it's helped me. But anyways, so going back to, you know, the whole leukemia thing, like, we had stopped going to church for a while, you know, like, my mom had left the church for whatever reason, and so we had stopped going to church, and so at this time, I was 14, and, we were like, and this is like my own little miracle is, you know, because so they were basically prepping me to die, you know, they were sending me to therapy, they, you know, to come to terms with it. And I think at that age, you don't necessarily really come to terms with it. But at that time, I was also like, you know, I remember this one specific instance where I was walking to the school bus, and to get to the bus stop, you have to walk down this really narrow road. And it's like way out in like the desert somewhere. So like the roads aren't necessarily like set up like regular or as wide. They're kind of just basically ditches that they paved through. Like, I remember this one, like, I was just like, well, if I'm going to die, I might as well just, you know, kill myself anyways. And I remember, like, trying to step out in front of the truck, a truck that was coming down the same street. And it, like, swerved out of the way somehow. I don't know how I made it through that narrow road. And it, like, didn't even stop or whatever. It just kept going. It acted like it didn't even see me on the side of the road. Or in the middle of the road. Thank God. Because, you know, suicide is never the answer. If you are definitely dealing with depression or things like that, definitely seek help. You know, there's definitely more to life than just that space and time. I know it can be rough and it can be dark and it can be scary, but life does get better. And so I was dealing with a lot of stuff, and it was just such a dark, dark place in my life where I just didn't see the point in living if I was going to die anyways. It was really hard, and it took a big toll on my mom. Like, I think I would hear her at night crying, and she tried her best to be as strong, but, you know, how do you tell a mother, like, her kid is dying, you know, someone she, you know, I'm her firstborn, and so how, you know, I could just imagine having to, you know, I can't even imagine, like. And she was so hurt and so scared and everything like that. She tried to be strong and everything, and she tried her best to make it a better time. But it still really sucked. And so anyways, what ended up happening, we ran into some old friends from the church. And y'all can believe this or not. Y'all can take it as it is. Y'all can leave it alone. See into it as you will or whatever. But I'm gonna start crying. So we had ran into some old friends, and they invited us to go to church. So this was like 2 weeks before they were gonna do a bone marrow transplant, you know, to like actually really confirm whether I had leukemia or not. And so, because they had basically said, like, you know, yes, you definitely do have it, but we just need to run this test, you know, just to, like, triple make sure. And so I go to church, you know, or so they invite us to church, right, 2 weeks. And so my mom has my pastor pray for me, and he, you know, to pray for healing. She tells him the situation, and, you know, I don't want to, like, I honestly don't quite remember, like, it wasn't like fire came down from heaven or anything, and, you know, I felt the disease leave my body or anything like that. To be honest, all I remember is being prayed for, and being told everything was going to be okay, which was kind of, like, I kind of didn't believe it in the very beginning, because everyone from that point on was kind of just like, LOL, like, you're gonna die, kid, have fun. And even, like, the teachers, like, in eighth grade were very concerned about me. Like, they would always ask me and, like, checking up on me and everything like that. But it was really hard to, like, I guess, express how scared I was. And I didn't want to seem like a burden, especially to my mom. Like, I've never really talked to her about this, but, like, I was terrified. But I tried to put on a brave face for my mom, because she was trying to be strong. So I was trying to be strong so I couldn't fall apart or my mom would fall apart, kind of thing. And so anyways, going back to it. So we go to the doctors and they run a blood test. Right. And so they were just like, they literally walk in nonchalantly, by the way, like, I'm holding my breath, like, I'm just like, this is gonna, you know, determine the rest of my life, really. And they were just like, you will never have to see us again. They're just like, your white blood cells just spiked through the roof. Well, not through the roof, but they were just like, they went up, because there was a certain point where, like, my white blood cells didn't go up, they didn't go down. They were low, but then there was, like, this one where they didn't go up, they didn't go down or anything like that. So it was crazy. And so for all of a sudden to go from, you know, to like each time going to the doctor, they got lower and lower until like they stopped moving at all. And then I think after that, they had gone lower, and then to just spike up, it was a miracle. And I'm grateful and I'm blessed. And so my heart goes out to people who actually do have this disease. It is very hard and it's a very rough disease. And not a lot of people, you know, make it. And I do have and I thank God every day, you know, for my life. And I do, you know, because it could have completely gone the other way. You know, like, I probably wouldn't be here sitting in my room on my bed talking into my phone. But so during all that, especially dealing with that anger and that sadness and that darkness, and I was able to forgive my dad. And I don't even remember how it came about. Like, I just remember I remember talking to the therapist. And so there's a movie, I don't know if you guys ever seen it. It's called Broken Bridges. It's one of my favorite movies. One of the best soundtracks, I think, out there. It's like a country movie. It has, is it Toby Keith? Or no, it's not Tim McGraw. I think it is Toby Keith. And, you know, it's a touching story. But, and I was just like, for some reason, during that time, like, I mean, I still like sad music to this day. I find it very calming, and like slow music, I should say. I find it very calming and things like that. And so it was very rough, you know. And so I remember talking to my therapist, and she was just like, and I told her, I was just like, I'm so angry. And I was like, and I don't know where this anger is coming from. And she was just like, well, what's happened in your life? She was like, I know you're going through this and all this other stuff. And I was like, well, I'm not necessarily angry about that situation. She was like, for some reason, I felt like I deserved to die, or like to be sick or something like that. I've always felt like at that point, I felt like I deserve bad things to happen to me, which doesn't make sense, I guess, because I was so young. But for some reason in my little preteen mind, it was definitely something that I felt like I deserved for some reason. And it was a very humbling experience going through that. But, you know, I was just like, well, you know, my dad doesn't love me. So why even go? And then she was like, well, let's talk about that. And then she was like, and so I guess during all that, like, I realized that I was holding on to something that I didn't need to hold on to. Like, I was facing life or death. And at the end of the day, that was something that didn't necessarily matter, because he was never gonna be there. He wasn't gonna be, it was only just hurting me all the more. And so during all that, I was able to forgive him, and everything like that. And, you know, I don't have any ill feelings towards my father. And, you know, I don't really feel anything towards my father. And so anyways, going back into it. So I started going to church consistently after that. I was even in ministry. I ended up being a song leader, a Bible study, like a teen Bible study leader. You know, like, basically, if there was a ministry in the church, I was there. Like, I wanted to do it. You know, I was on the drama team. And I loved doing it. I loved, you know, ministering unto other people. And there has been, like, definite times where, and we'll get into it, like, where I was leading songs and I could just feel the Holy Ghost, you know, just come down in the whole presence and expect. And it was always through times where, like, I was struggling. There was a specific instance where, well, you know what, let's get into, like, my dad. So before my dad died, he was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver. Right. So after all this, I go into high school. I make a great group of friends. You know, I meet my two best friends that I, you know, I'm currently friends with now, you know, and, you know, I was in ministry. I was in church. I was living a happy life. So when I was 18, the beginning of senior year, my dad, he started causing a scene with, because my mom's best friend at the time, used to live like across the street from my dad. So he would show up drunk at her house and like be like, I need to see my son and I want to talk to him and like all this other stuff. And so like I basically went over to tell them to leave these poor people alone. And so at this time, like my dad was just like, well, I want to get back into your life and all this other stuff and like and everything. And he's like, I want to be there for you. And he's like, I'm so sorry. And he apologized and he asked for my forgiveness and every like thing like that. And I sat down and I had a real honest conversation. And I told him, I was like, you know what? I was just like, I appreciate what you're saying, but I was like, it's a little 18 years too late. I was like, you literally could have come anytime. I was like, even when I was 17, before I had turned 18, I was just like, you could have come and said these things and I would have jumped on the opportunity. But I was just like, I'm at that time, I thought I was an adult and I was like, LOL, like I'm an adult. I've been raised. I don't really necessarily need you. And I was just like, I just came for you to, you know, to stop bugging these poor people. I appreciate, you know, that you realize that you did wrong. I'm glad that you realized that, you know, that it did hurt. But I was just like, there was a time when I needed you and you weren't there. And I was like, you're not going to be able to see something in me and say, and you don't like it and say something about it. I was like, because you weren't there. You weren't able to change the fact that, you know, that I did something or that I don't do something a certain way or whatever, because that's, or just the way I talk or whatever, like it's just not going to happen. I was like, cause you have no right to say anything. I was like, if you really, I was just like, if you really want to have a relationship, then, you know, I'm open for it. But I was just like, at this time, I'm really busy, you know? And so like after that, we never talked again. And so the last time I see him was at his funeral. And so his funeral was a very fun process because, sorry, I'm making tea. My throat's getting a little dry. So the funeral was a fun process just for the fact that he... Like, a lot of people didn't even really know he had a son. Like, I had met all the aunts and everything like that. Like, on my dad's side of the family, like, there's so many cousins I probably don't even know about. My mom always jokes that, like, I shouldn't date a Mexican because they might be my cousin. Which, in reality, is kind of true. But, excuse me. And so, we go to his funeral, right? He dies, like when I'm like 21, and it was a very interesting experience. You know, I had went because like his family, like his sisters had family. I guess apparently they were keeping tabs on me better than my dad was. They showed up to my church one day, and they were like, they're like, LOL. Well, not LOL, but they were just like, hey, we have some news. Your dad died. And everything like that. And they were letting me know so I could go to the funeral. So the only reason I went to the funeral was because they asked me to. And so I went to support them. And so they had the viewing. And it was in a Catholic church, which is fine. It was really awkward because, like, they had the viewing. And then, like, you know how, like, you go, you view the body, and then you go give your condolences to, like, the family. So I get there, I go, you know, say my goodbyes to my dad. I'm like, you know, rest in peace, whatever. And then I give my condolences to my aunt, right? And so they're all sitting in the front row, and then they ask me to sit in the front row. Well, people are still giving their condolences. So I sit next to my aunt. And so one of my aunts is literally having to introduce me to people. And I remember, like, the funniest thing. Like, I was trying not to laugh because there was an older lady there. And she was just, like, she was whispering to my aunt. And I can hear her because I'm literally, like, maybe 2 feet away from her and my aunt. And so she's, like, who's this? And she didn't even really know how to whisper. Like, it was a loud whisper because, I mean, I guess that runs in family because I don't know how to whisper either. But she was, like, who's this? And then my aunt was like, oh, this is Victor's son. And then so she whispers, I didn't know Victor Addison, which was the response from a lot of the people, which, you know, granted, I understood because, you know, he wasn't really in my life. I wasn't really there and all this other stuff. Like, a very small portion of the family and friends really knew that Victor had a son. And so she was just like, I didn't know Victor had a son. And like my response naturally was just surprise. And like the old lady looked mortified and I was like, oh, just kidding. I'm at a funeral. Like, this is not the time or place to like be, you know, doing anything like this. And so to me, it was comical. Like, I like it didn't faze me. It kind of actually touched me because like literally that showroom or like the pews were packed. Like, there was so many people there. And I'm not necessarily sure if that's just a Mexican thing of where just like so many, like, you know, where they just, it's like the cousins bring the cousins' girlfriends and the sisters and like the goldfish shows up too. I don't really know. But there was a lot of people there who were obviously mourning his death. And that kind of touched me because I was just like, okay, well, at least he was loved and was able to love somebody. And that kind of gave me hope. The only thing that made me sad is that no one really spoke at the funeral. Like, one of his sisters said something and like that was it. And I was just like, no, for my funeral, there's going to have to be like, it's going to be dramatic. Like, someone's going to have to throw themselves at my grave, like, you know, on my casket as it's lowering. I don't know, like, but who knows? that's probably not going to happen. Anyways, so going back a few years. Oh, yeah. So that was real funny. And then so they had like, so I guess, like, they have, like, the viewing, and then they actually have, like, the funeral where they, like, bury him and everything like that. So I go to the funeral, and then, so I was sitting in the back because we had showed up late, and then so my aunts had called me to go to the front. So I go to the front, and then there was, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, anybody, but, like, there's this thing where, and I've never seen this before, like, I've never experienced it, where I guess there's, like, this incense, they handed him like this incense burner and you spread the smoke over the casket for some reason. And I wasn't raised Catholic. Again, like I said, I was raised in a Christian Pentecostal home. So I don't understand what's happening or what this is supposed to do. Apparently it's supposed to cleanse something. I really don't know. I'm sorry for my ignorance. But so like they all go up there, all my aunts go up there. And then they call me to go up there. And I don't even really know why they called me to go up there. Like, it was funny because, like, people would be like, oh, I'm sorry for your loss. And I'm just like, homie, I didn't really lose anything. Like, I'd be like, you know what? I'm sorry for your loss. Because I didn't really know the guy. Like, let's be honest here, right? So I was trying to be on my best behavior, I promise. And so they hand me the incense thing. And I don't know what I'm doing. So I guess you're supposed to, like, you know, swing it back and forth a little bit. And, like, I don't know. So I panic and I, like, I'm like, ah, like I swing it for like 2 seconds and then I hand it off to like my aunt because it was a disaster. So I was surprised I did end up crying at my dad's funeral. But I think I was just crying for the fact that like in the back of my head, I always thought my dad would come back. I always thought like he'd, you know, he would always be, you know, like, hey, you know, he would stick to what he had said that one time. And he never did. So I think I was just sad for the fact that, like, I wasn't really going to ever have that father figure in my life. And honestly, like, my pastor stepped in to be that father figure, like, through the teenage years. I would even, like, during, like, when I would live, because things got so bad with my grandma. And me and my grandma are in a good place now. But because things got so bad with my grandma, like, I would stay at the weekends at my pastor's house with his wife. And he would take me to, you know, do all the ministry that I was, you know, involved in and everything like that. So it was a great blessing. It taught me a lot about family and everything like that. And, you know, being humble. And so they like were always like my pastor has always just been there, which I'm very grateful for. Granted, there have been a few issues between me and my pastor, but we won't really go into that because I'm already 49 minutes into this episode. And I'm pretty sure you guys aren't even really listening anymore. But anyways, so when I was in high school, there was this thing that had happened where it was the last week of senior year, right? And so I had a plan. After graduation, I was going to move out with some friends my church friends and, you know, have the roommates or whatever. Granted, I'm never doing roommates again. It is rough. It is hard. The next roommate I want to have is my wife. Anyways, so at that time, like, I guess my mom was still, like, clinging to, like, her little boy kind of thing. And, you know, me and my mom have always been close. Have always, always been close up until that point. I mean, granted, we're in a better place now. But so we get into this argument, right, over a mattress, by the way. Moms of the world out there, if you're a mom out there and you're listening, you guys, it can be so frustrating. Oh my God. Over a mattress. She kicked me out of the house over a mattress. Because her graduation gift to me was going to be a mattress, which is fine. You know, she wanted me to have, you know, once I move out, you know, wanted me to at least have a comfortable place to sleep, which is understandable, which is respectable, you know, admirable kind of thing, right? But, like, literally, those last few months of senior year, she made my life a living hell. Like, she would, like, my mom never, like, my mom wouldn't let me take out the trash at night. She wouldn't let me climb trees. She wouldn't let me play in the dirt. She was always afraid I was going to get kidnapped. So she wouldn't necessarily make these decisions. But when I turned 18, she was just like, oh, you're an adult now. You need to know these things. And I was like, you sheltered me for the most of my life. How am I supposed to, like, you know, how am I supposed to know these things? And so I get this random text one day, like, I was at a fellowship with, you know, some of the church group, and I get a text, and my mom was like, hey, go to these, you know, these certain websites to, you know, pick out a style you want, but left it like that. So I was like, style of what? I didn't even know there was different style of mattresses. Like, I just wanted a mattress, you know, or just needed a mattress, you know, like, it didn't matter to me, especially, like, 18-year-old me. Like, you don't think about what kind of mattress you want. Granted, now that I work in a furniture store, I'm just like, okay, well, you got your pillow tops, you got your, you know, you got your inner spring, you got your hybrids, and you got your not Tempur-Pedic, but your memory foam. Yeah. And so, anyways, so at that time, I was just like, well, does it really matter? Like, and so I had messaged her back. I was just like, styles for what? Mattresses? ? She texts back with, she was like, oh my God, I'm tired of doing everything for you. You're supposed to be an adult now and all this other stuff. I'm tired of holding your hand. And she, like, goes off. So I'm guessing she's, like, at this point, she was having a bad day. But then she texts me and says, don't ever bother coming home. And I was in shock. I was in tears. I was hurt. Of everyone that I knew in that space and time, I never thought I would have been rejected by my mother. Because me and my mom had been so close. Because literally, for the longest time, it was literally just me and my mother. but it hurt. Like, I was, and as any, you know, it was felt like I was getting rejected by another parent. Well, I mean, I guess in a way I was, right? So I go to my pastor, and I was just like, hey, this happened, you know, my mom told me to go this and all this other stuff. And so he was just like, okay, so the plan, like, what I had planned just happened a little faster than expected. You know, I ended up moving in with a group of friends because they already had the house, and they were a little bit older than me. So they were already situated. So they were just like, yeah, just move in. You can find a job, after after school or whatever. So it was the last week of senior year. And so I would go to prayer in the mornings. And so my pastor would pick me up and then take me. So, like, my church is, like, in the middle of the town. And my high school is, like, not in the middle of town. It's legit, like, 12 miles out of town. And so, like, every day for that whole week, like, he would take me out to eat to make sure I was fed. And then he made sure that I was going to, you know, finish school. Because I told him, I was like, you know what? I was like, let me just handle this the way I handle this. Let me just sleep in for 3 days and then I'll get over it. And he was like, no, you need to finish school. Like, he was like, you're going to, he threatened me. He said, you're going to walk across that stage or I'm dragging you. And I was like, okay, rude, you know? So, you know, he definitely took care of me, and he's definitely, you know, stepped up in that part just to make sure that I was okay. He would even, like, I would overhear him, like, asking my roommates how I was doing, and they're like, oh, he's doing fine, or he's doing okay, or whatever. But yeah, so now, so going through that and going through everything that I've gone through, it's definitely taught me that, like, things happen. The unexpected can happen. You know, I came to grips with my mortality at a very young age. I know that literally I'm blessed to be as healthy as I am, you know, to have my life. My heart goes out to those people who are struggling with their health. And, you know, I pray for them. But it's like up to that point, it threw a wrench, you know, but I kept on, and I was in ministry for several years. And then I left the church because I was being dumb and was like, no one understands me and I'm all alone. And, you know, I had left the church for like 3 months and then come back. But anyways, so, you know, all of those events and everything, all the small things, like my grandma, you know, she would always take us hiking. She would always take us out to go somewhere. She would always, you know, there was a lot of lessons to be learned. Looking back, I'm very grateful, you know, that I was, you know, yeah, it wasn't the best. There was a lot of abuse. There was verbal, physical, and everything like that. But I'm very grateful that I'm here today and I'm able to share this experience. In these past experiences, it's, you know, because a lot of people going through what I went through haven't made it, which is really, really sad. But if you're out there, and you feel like you're going through something, I just want to let you know that there are people around you, and you may not realize it yet, but there are people around you, or there is going to be people that do care about you, that do need you in your life. So my advice is, you know, seek help, stay strong, talk to somebody about it, you know, and even no matter what anybody says, even if there's something negative, like, well, you're just needy and you need to grow up or whatever, don't listen to that, you know, be strong, keep your head held high, and don't let anybody tell you anything different, you know. But yeah, I've run out of juice. I'm now going to go catch up on some Real Housewives of Beverly Hills because the drama is getting a little intense. But yeah, so if you have any questions about, you know, what I've shared, if you're going through the same thing, please let me know. You know, my email is, well, I'm going to give you the short one. So it's M as in Mary. So it's MAG, the number one, SON, at outlook.com. So that's M as in Mary, A as in Apple, G as in girl, the number one, S as in Sam, O is in orange, N is in Nancy, at outlook.com. And definitely feel free to, you know, ask questions, ask for advice, ask, you know, and everything like that. So now the next episode, I'll go ahead and go into a little bit more of like my adulthood, I guess, since I went from like childhood through teen, and that was just a tragic mess. And now my adulthood is less of a tragic mess. And everything like that, and what it was like living with those roommates, because, oh my God, it was so rough. But thank y'all for listening. I hope if you're out there, God bless. Y'all have a good day, good evening, wherever you are, you know, and keep your head held high. Thank you.